But first, Matt Berninger. He's the frontman and co-founder of the indie rock band The National. Matt helped forge the band's distinctive sound with his trademark baritone voice and poetic lyrics. Matt has poured all of those singing and songwriting talents into his debut solo album, Serpentine Prison. It features an all-star cast including Andrew Bird, bassist Gail Ann Dorsey, and drummer Matt Barrick of The Walkmen. The album was produced by the legendary Booker T. Jones. We zoomed in with Matt from his brother's semi-famous garage in LA to chat about the record, how the process differed from his work with The National, and what it was like to reignite his collaboration with Booker T.
I reached out to him because I long wanted to sort of maybe do like a covers album, and Willie Nelson's Stardust is one of the models for like how to do a covers album, and Booker produced and arranged that. So I never had his email, but I went to his Booker T. Jones website and clicked the big management button and wrote to him and see if he'd want to be involved at all. And his daughter, Olivia, who is now his manager, wrote me back right away and said, yeah, he would be. And so I got in contact, talked with him, and then we quickly decided for him to produce and arrange the whole thing. Over the course of, figuring out covers, I started sharing with him some originals, and he's like, you know, do you have any more of these? And by the end of the recording process, we had 12 originals and 7 covers, and it just made sense to just use all the originals. And that was like, well, then that's not a covers album. It was a solo album, you know. So it really was sort of organically. I didn't have this like idea to have a solo record until we were halfway done with this thing.
Total submission. I've seen a vision. Everyone's screaming. I've been daydreaming. Sorry, I'm fishing without permission. Tell her I'm missing in a serpentine prison.
The album features an impressive cast of other musical contributors, probably, well, I would say more followers than I have on Twitter. I don't have many followers, but still, with that high volume of virtuosity in the studio with you, I'm surprised that there's not even one Andrew Bird versus Booker T, whistle versus Hammond organ paddle on the entire record. How did you manage to create such a subtle, understated sound on the album?
That was a lot of, and Booker and Sean O'Brien, my engineer, we talked a lot about just the sound of the room and making it, you know, just only the essential elements. And even though like a lot of the songs have a lot of elements on them, we wanted the songs to feel spacious, you know, and I wanted it to feel like you're in the room with a few people, you know, and it's like when you listen to Stardust, it feels like Willie's sitting right next to you, you know, and Booker's, like whenever Booker produces, his records always, I always say, you can hear people look at each other. You can hear when Steve Cropper looks at Al Jackson and they take off in a new thing, you know, and that was happening a lot in the studio. Booker, you know, people, he was very much the shepherd of the song. We get started and he'd kind of figure out the groove and the tempo and all that stuff and everybody would follow along. And so he would always say, like, the songs were all there, we just had to catch them.
You know? Right, yeah.
Whatever it is, I try not to listen. Cold cynicism, a blind nihilism. I need a vacation from intoxication. Tell her I'm missing a serpentine prison.
And he liked to catch them fast. We didn't do too many takes, and he's like, that's good, let's move on, like the basics. And after sometimes 3 takes, he'd be like, I think we got the basics. And everybody came in really prepared. Everybody there was just really pro. I mean, they all knew they were coming in to work with Booker T. Jones, so everybody did their homework, you know, me included. And Booker was really happy. He kept saying how impressed he was with everybody, and that made everybody feel really, you know, when Booker T. Jones is impressed with your songwriting and your musicianship. And he was very vocal with everybody about what he loved. And yeah, he's a very generous coach, you know.
Yeah, and the whole album was recorded in just 14 days. So how did the writing of Serpentine Prison, the album, how did that differ from the National's process?
Well, I mean, I when I'm writing, I'm writing alone to music. And so that process wasn't that different, the writing of the lyrics. And I was writing, I mean, all the songs I was writing with guys from the National for the past several years have been for all these these big kind of concept, you know, things, either a stage play or an, you know, a short film. So that was different. It's just that, like, I knew that none of these songs had to serve any other purpose other than just being a good song. And the recording process was very, very different. But the writing process, like, people ask me all the time, do I have to go into a different headspace? I'm like, I don't have different headspaces, you know? I don't have very much space, you know, different rooms in my brain. It's all one giant circus tent, you know? I'm always writing about myself in one way or another. I'm often writing songs I wish other people would write to me, you know? Like, I'm imagining what would be the sexiest song someone would write about me.
My eyes are t-shirts that's so easy to read. I wear them for you, but they're all about me. They always say I want you to take me home. They always say I want you to leave me.
It's like my brain only really has the Matt Berninger channel on all the time, you know?
Well, it's a great channel, so why do you need other channels?
I wish I could turn it to something else.
Well, yeah, but you mentioned the recording process is very different, was very different for Serpentine Prison versus how you record with the National.
Yeah.
How so?
With the National, we tinker and we send stuff back and forth, and songs are these lab animals that we keep, you know, it's like the Island of Dr. Moreau, and everybody, you know, changes the DNA of the creature and then sends it back. And I mean, that's what's fun about the National is the songs go through these mutations and developments, you know, when we pass them all around. But this was sort of like all the ingredients were all brought to the lab at the same time and just waited for the lightning to strike until the thing, you know, rose up off the table and started walking around, you know. And
yeah, it's alive. It's alive.
And so everything, we made all these songs quickly. And so that's different. The recording process was very fast.
In the room, the temperature drops. When I see you, something sad goes missing. I stop crying, lay down, and listen.
And not everybody came out at the same time. I couldn't squeeze everybody. It was a really small studio, so it was sort of a rotating roster of people. I'd bring in like three people. We'd work on the songs that I wrote with them. And those people would all work on whatever songs everyone else was, you know, who was there at the time had worked on. So I can't remember who all plays on which song, you know, between all the 10 or 12 people that were coming and going. I sometimes don't remember who always plays on whose songs, and nobody really cared. You know, if you're in whatever song we were working on, everybody just jumped in. Whoever's there, everybody jumped in and worked on. All those things. It was great to connect all these different people that I had sort of connected with separately over such a long period of time, to get them all to get to know each other was really, that was fun.
Cool. Yeah. You say that the song One More Second was written with the intention for it to be a kind of answer to Dolly Parton's I Will Always Love You, or sort of the other side of that conversation. How so?
Well, a lot of these songs, and that one in particular, I wanted to make, you know, a song that was a song that was just like a, you know, a great classic song. And you could, I think if you pick out any record by anybody, there's one or two songs on their record, which is just trying to hold on to a relationship or trying to hold on to a situation that's slipping away.
Just give me a little more time. Give me a little bit of warning. Baby, I'm gonna be fine when I figure out where I'm going.
And it's just such a classic thing, you know. And Dolly Parton, you know, I Will Always Love You, she was writing that to Porter Wagoner as she was trying to leave his television show and kind of break out of the bubble that he was trying to keep her in. And I don't know if they were actually involved in a romantic relationship or not, but he depended on Dolly for his TV show, right? And she no longer depended on him for her career, and she had to try to, you know, break that to him. And I always thought, well, like, what would he have, if Porter Wagoner could write a song to try to, like, hold on to Dolly, what would he write, you know? And so One More Second is sort of like, maybe it's just an imagined way of thinking of these songs. Like every desperate love song has another side of that story.
Give me one more second to dry my eyes. Give me one more day to realize. Smoke's in our eyes or in the distance. Either way, we're gonna miss. Give me one more year to get back on track. Give me one more life to win you back. Smoke's in our eyes or in the distance. Either way, we're gonna miss.
Every everybody's often writing about the same thing, you know. And it all feels real. It's not, I'm not making stuff up, but when we pulled that song together, like, oh, this could be one of those songs, you know. And Booker really thought, like, let's go for it with this one. Yeah.
A standout track on Serpentine Prison is Collar of Your Shirt. Mm. You sing in a bit of a higher register in this song, and the musicianship really shines. The interplay of the organ, yeah, the strings and the guitar make for this low-key, bittersweet epic. Can you tell me about this song?
Yeah, that one's actually really important to me, too, because that's the one that Booker really... the first half of the song, I wrote that with Walter Martin, and we had the first half, and then... when we got towards the end, Booker just felt like it needed to go somewhere new. The collar of your shirt. I mean, kind of, he's like, it's not long enough yet, you know? It doesn't feel finished. And so he just kind of found that shift, and it goes into that second part. And he encouraged me just to write and to start singing, and encouraged me. And he plays the Hammond like it's a vocalist. And if you listen to MG's records, it's the Hammond, his organ, he's always the vocalist, you know? I mean, sometimes he's holding down the groove and stuff, but when something takes off, it's like Booker's the one who's always writing melody. Do not wanna believe it. It's better off than I don't know. So afraid your love. And so the end of Collar of Your Shirt, he was very leading that in the melodies, and I would go up to these things, and I would follow him up onto those higher branches melodically, and he would kind of just like, it was very safe to go into territory melodically, and he pushed me there. And so, yeah, that's a really, that one really, really means a lot to me, because I think I learned so much. Yeah.
I have an anecdote for you. Our producer, Brad, saw the National in Milwaukee several years back, and you came out into the crowd with what he noted was an incredibly long mic cable. And as you were climbing on the seats and over the people, you came within a few feet of Brad, and he managed to get a very blurry cell phone picture of the encounter. Terrible composition, great memento. Do you miss performing live as much as Brad misses going to shows?
That part of it, yeah. I mean, I've really taken advantage of being home, meaning mm-hmm. I feel like I've been busier since this year than I would have been had I been touring, because when you're touring, you like 90% of your energy is just gets taken by just the travel, packing everything into the van or the bus that's going to take you to the airport, unpacking, getting into, you know, the next plane to get to the next city, to get to the next hotel, to get to the next sound check, to get to the next gig, to get to the next hotel, blah, blah, blah. That stuff absorbs 75 to 80% of all your just mental and physical energy. And then the other part that's left is the show. The show takes up the next 20%. And so I've been home, and I've just been writing almost every morning or every day, just a little bit on something or other. So I've been stacking up writing and trying to stack up sleep, you know, and riding my bike and stuff. Writing my songs and riding my bike, you know. If only you, if only you come around the distant axis, I
would do. Words like dark, moody, and brooding are often used to describe your music, but your music videos and your stage banter are often dryly humorous or even goofy. Is there a balance there, a kind of a yin and yang thing?
I'm mostly just trying to have fun all the time, and I have fun writing really sad songs. It's really, really fun. It's really cathartic to just write really sad, moving songs, and I don't know why it is that all the dark, sad, sort of melancholy stuff is always where ends up in songs. But like in comedy, I think comedy has to have as much sadness. You'd have to build up the sadness or build up the tension in order to relieve it. And comedy is all it is a series of building up tension, building up stress, building up anxiety for the audience, and then making them laugh about it. You know, I mean, Nick Cave and Tom Waits and Leonard Cohen and Bob Dylan are hysterical. Nina Simone's funny. It has you know,
to do with England. England's a metaphor for Wisconsin in this song.
That's not true.
They don't think we're funny. Should.
Matt Berninger, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Matt Berninger is the founder and frontman of The National. His debut solo album is called Serpentine Prison. Find out more about Matt at WPR.org/beta.
And the highest compliment that you can pay Punch Drunk Love to me is that David Lynch wanted to give it an award.
Film critic Adam Neyman on Paul Thomas Anderson's one-of-a-kind cinematic universe. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Give me one more second to dry my eyes. Give me one.